On today's episode of the There Is a Floodlight That Never Goes Out podcast, myself, Tom and Will will be looking at what happened in last weekend's EFL League One and EFL Championship fixtures in a series which will run the course of the 2021-22 campaign. We'll also at the end do our start of our little predictions series in which Super Six Sky style-esque, we will predict the outcomes of six fixtures and have a points-based table, which at the end we will see who is the best predictor. So let's start with Friday's game, a clash of the titans, one may say, between Bournemouth and West Brom, two promotion favourites. It saw a stalemate, a 2-2, in what was a highly enthralling game, actually. Tom, what did you make of it?
Yeah, you're right in that, in saying it was highly enthralling. I don't think I've seen a Championship opening fixture deliver to its hype for many years now. And I'm really pleased this one did live up to the hype. Obviously, we've got to talk about Valerian Ismail and the way he set up his West Brom side. To be honest with you, considering he said that he'd play a different brand of football with better footballers, I didn't see anything different to the way he played with Barnsley last season and the way he set our team up. Alex Smowart was by far the best player on the pitch, and I'd say that's probably because he understands what Ismail wants from one of his players. And of course, I can't knock the actual coaching ability of Big Val. And I really like the West Brom side. I thought Bournemouth were really good too. And I used to really, well, not batter Scott Parker, but certainly not give him the credit that he was due in. And with a very, not sub-poor Bournemouth team, but a very weak Bournemouth team for what their squad can offer, I thought he set them up excellently. Jayden Anthony on the left wing was outstanding, as was Gavin Kilkenny at the base of the Bournemouth midfield. So yeah, a really good game. And of course, you've got to mention the fact that it was 2-2. So maybe we're seeing two promotion rivals early on saying, you know, we're level with each other and we're going to give it a bloody good go.
Yeah, I mean, Will, you as a Barnsley fan yourself have seen a lot of Ismail over the past year. How do you think this squad sort of suits his style of play? Because to me, they were lacking that striker. And I don't think Carlin Grant really suits Ishmael's system. And I think if West Brom are to progress and challenge those top two places, they're going to have to bring someone in.
Yeah, I understand what you mean, Ed, in that I think, you know, a lot of fans from the outside would think Ishmael Ball needs some big shithouse striker up front. But yeah, I think it is possible, you know, for Ishmael to play without that sort of big, burly striker and play with someone more like Carlin Grant. Maybe if it doesn't work straight away, you know, once he's adapted to what he's got with this West Brom squad, I think, you know, we saw a few times with Barnsley last season, whether it's, you know, Carlton Morris or Woodrow instead of DK, we did still play some good football. One thing I would touch on, you know, Tom mentioned it, was Alex Mower. You know, we saw, you know, he's been hyped up for a long time now, and people wondered whether he'd be able to make the jump to a team like West Brom. And like Tom said, he was outstanding. You know, he really stood out as one of the best players, setting up that goal for Callum Robinson, which Robinson put away beautifully. And yeah, like you two mentioned, I think we witnessed two teams which are really going to give the league a good go this year, and two, you know, very strong promotion candidates.
Yeah, Ed, I mean, you've asked the questions on this one so far, but what did you think of the game?
I thought, like you said, it really delivered what it promised, sorry. There wasn't that tendency to sort of sit back and by either side. And to be fair, it's an Ishmael side, so I don't know why any of us were really expecting that. Like I said, I just felt Carlin Grant didn't offer enough in the game. Callum Robinson, I thought was excellent. He obviously got his goal well-deserved. But also a word for Cedric Kipre. Obviously, he went to West Brom from Wigan, and for whatever reason, it didn't really work out in the Premier League. But in a back three system, I think he's absolutely perfect. I think maybe the one area of weakness for West Brom after Carlin Grant was Button in goal. I thought he could have done better with some of the saves. But no, I thought it was a pretty commanding display from both sides. And, you know, we saw Ishmael Ball in full flow, and it's only going to get more exciting for West Brom fans.
Yeah, moving on then to another game that didn't fail to disappoint EFL fans, and that's Luton Town 3, Peterborough United 0. Now, Ed, how good were the Hatters in this game?
They were excellent. Fred Onyedinma put in one of the best debut performances you'll see across the whole of football, to be honest, this year, because it was excellent. Elijah Adebayo, we've talked about him before on this podcast. We're massive fans, and he got his goal. And the same with Harry Kornick. So when your front three is getting all your goal contributions, you know, that's excellent. But I also think a lot of it came down to how poor Peterborough United were. I mean, they had the lowest XG in the whole league, and they really didn't offer much at all. And you'd have thought with the likes of George Grant, they might have had a bit more creative spark. I've been critical of Johnson Clark-Harris, and I think I'll remain to be critical of him. I don't think he's a championship-level striker, to be honest, but we have to give him time, to be fair. But yeah, Nathan Jones and Luton showed everything they're about on Saturday.
Yeah, and this, of course, was with Carlos Mendes Gomez on the bench. So, you know, they've got still so much more to come. One thing that really sort of surprised me, slash didn't surprise me, but when I found out that Cal Naismith was Luton's captain at centre-half. Now, I know he's filled in there in the past, but quite the transformation from Paul Cook's go-to right-winger to Luton Town centre-back and captain. So, and he was really solid, actually, so I can't knock it. But yeah, further points on Peterborough, Will. They set up in quite a rigid 4-4-2, and Mark Beavers and Frankie Kent were torn apart, really, by Onyedinma and Adebayo and co. Do you think this is a sign of things to come for the Posh?
It was a very tough opening fixture. You know, they're facing a strong Luton Town side. And I think Peterborough, for me, were just a prime example of a team freshly promoted and just didn't realise how much of a step up the Championship can be, and how that standard 4-4-2 formation just doesn't cut it at this level, in terms of, you know, you've got to have a bit of something different, haven't you, at this level to succeed, really. And there was just nothing in that Peterborough squad that just stood out as, you know, there was just nothing, was there, across the entire, you know, midfield, defence, forwards, whatever. For me, I just didn't see any sort of real spark, and Luton just took them to the cleaners.
Yeah, they really did.
A little bit with that whole, you didn't talk about the 4-4-2. You know, I don't think it really was a 4-4-2, to be honest, in terms of Sammy Schmoddick's. You know, he'd been coming in behind Johnson Clark-Harris.
I was just talking in terms of being... It was quite rigid in the sense of heat maps that Schmoddick and Clark-Harris... You know, Schmoddick obviously plays off of Clark-Harris, but they were sort of playing as a front two. And Josh Knight, a player who played at centre-back a lot for Wickham last season in the midfield, and then George Grant, a player who... is, you know, we all know that he's an attacking player. For them two to be your central midfield partnership, I thought that was really naive from Darren Ferguson. But I don't think this is something that we're going to see just once. We saw last season Peterborough score loads of goals, they concede loads of goals, and if they can just put a few more in the back of their opponent's nets, I think high scoring games will be a sign of things to come.
Yeah, definitely.
Moving on to a game now that definitely me and Will have a vested interest in, and that's Cardiff City 1, Barnsley 1. A quite entertaining game for a 1-1, you'd probably say, in a game in which either side probably could have scored 3 or 4. Starting with Barnsley, Will, what things do you take away from the game that you probably didn't already know?
Just promising signs. You know, we went into this one, you know, myself included. I'll happily admit that when that team was put out at 2 o'clock, I just thought, it's another season of mediocrity for us again. Because, you know, I saw the likes of, you know, Ben Williams, and they completely proved me wrong, and I'm so happy they did. Ben Williams, for the hour that he played, you know, coming back from a severe injury, I thought was really solid. The back three of Kitchen, Helic and Sibic, okay, they give a few chances away, but they're going to, you know, it's going to happen without, you know, we were missing Meds Anderson. And I was happy with the back three. Toby Sibbett topping it off with his first ever league goal, which was taken like a striker. So, and I thought Carlton Morris and Woodrow created a lot of good stuff. Ramel Palmer, I thought, was impressive, especially in the first half. So, yeah, promising. I think Barnsley fans of the whole happily take a point away at Cardiff on the opening day of the season. You know, it's not the easiest place to go. So yeah, I'm dead happy with that.
Yeah, I'm certainly inclined to agree with you. At 0-0, I said I'd take a point. At 1-0, I said I'd take a point. And at 1-1, I said I'd take a point. So, I mean, pretty consistent there. And it was decent for the Reds. Josh Benson with a pass that was so beautiful. Yeah. It's unbelievable how he's managed to pick out Toby Sibbick from his position on the park. And I really hope that's a sign of things to come for Benson. Ed, we now have, you know, we now have to ask you about Cardiff and the Bluebirds. Who impressed you for them?
Not many, to be honest. I have to say, I was sort of struck when I saw the starting lineup at sort of how weak it looked. Mm. You know, you think of Cardiff teams in past, and this just did not inspire me one bit. I mean, I haven't jumped on the Mick McCarthy's Cardiff hype train at all. And when we've done our pre-season predictions, I didn't then. I think you've got, you know, a fairly solid back three. Obviously, Aidan Flint, who, he's, you know, I saw him when he was at Wednesday on loan. He's a top centre-half for this league. But, you know, a midfield pairing of Marlon Pack and Joe Rawls, it's average, in my opinion. Look, I think Ryan Giles is a player I want to highlight because, you know, he had a great spell at Coventry and then Rotherham last campaign. And I think he could really excite Cardiff fans.
Sorry to interrupt you, Ed. From a Barnsley point of view, I thought Ryan Giles was brilliant. So he put some, like, I think he got the assist for the corner and he put two on a plate for Bakuna, which, you know, should have been goals, really, if we're being serious. So I think Giles was the player for me on that Cardiff side who did impress me because, you know, some of his deliveries into the box were, like, outstanding.
Yeah. I thought, you know, he was the only one of few players with a bit of spark about them, but obviously they've still got some key players to come back. We can't, you know, get around that. And Kiefer Moore only came on the 76th minute. James Collins is no Kiefer Moore. But yeah, it just looks a really poor Cardiff squad, if I'm being completely honest. And with no new additions incoming, I don't think they'll do anything special.
I think that's fair. And of course, you know, Ryan Giles he was a real pain in the backside for us. So yeah, I think you're right to highlight him. Well, you know, he was superb for them. Moving on to our penultimate championship game that we're going to look at, and that's Preston North End 1, Hull City 4. Now, I'd like to start this by saying Hull, you know, maybe the stats in terms of shots will tell you that they probably deserve to get four goals, but they really did not. You know, for all their, you know, endeavour, you know, Keane Lewis-Potter was outstanding. Four goals just doesn't reflect the nature of the game. They had an XG of 1.44. You know, obviously the Richie Smallwood goal took a massive deflection. And I think Hull fans are just getting way ahead of their stations again. They might become a weekly target for me. And, you know, I picked them out to finish 23rd. So maybe I'm just trying to save face a bit here. but I really didn't like Hull for all that, you know, probably, you know, they defied expectations to win 4-1, didn't they, ultimately? How terrible did Preston look?
Look, I won't beat around the bush and said it in the pre-season predictions. I'm really not expecting much, and I'm pretty sure I had them to go down. I can't remember, but I'm pretty sure I did. Emil Rees-Jacobsen, he might have got the goal, but a pairing of him and Chad Evans up front, I'm really sorry, that is not going to cut it at this level. The midfield, I think, is actually quite impressive. You know, especially that midfield trio of Ledson, Brown and Whiteman, but they just looked uninspired and, you know, they've been embarrassed is what they've been. Mm-hmm. You know, their own patch. And like you said, Hull, you know, who, let's not forget, when Hull went down 1-0, you know, there were Hull fans saying, this is it, you know, a season of doom incoming, and look how it changed.
Yeah.
I think you're right about perhaps the scoreline flattered the Tiger a little bit. But all I will say, you've touched upon it there, Keane Lewis-Potter, he's going right to the very top. He's a stunning talent. And, you know, I'm going to put my neck out on the line here. I think he'll be a bigger player for Hull City than Jared Bowen was.
Wow. That is a big statement. Will, you know, do you think that Hull, this is time for things to come for the Tigers, or do you think this was probably just a fluke against a poor Preston side?
I think it's a sign that they're not a team to be taken, you know, you can't, they're not a team to be taken lightly. But, you know, like you said, the scoreline maybe flattered them a bit. But in fairness, Grant McCann's interview after the game was, you know, I thought it was impressive because he did say, you know, we can't expect this every week. Like, you know, we're not going to win. We're not going to put four past them every week. And, you know, he sort of accepted the fact that they're not going to win every game. And he said it's just about how we come back and recover. I think the Preston fault was that they got the early goal, then just sort of went into defensive mode and tried sitting back. And they just don't really have the sort of team to do that. You know, they're not a team who can sit on a 1-0 from after 8 minutes in the game. And yeah, I don't know. It was a really poor performance from Preston and, you know, a decent performance from Hull, and they deservedly won. Maybe the scoreline flattered them a little bit, but ultimately they won the game. That's what's important. So yeah, a good result for the Tigers and big improvement needed for Preston.
Yeah, yeah, fair enough. And just on Preston's midfield trio, Ed, I think Ryan Ledson's best performance so far this season was pulling Lucy Fallon from Corrie. it was absolutely terrible in the centre of the park for North End. Sheffield United 0, Birmingham 1 then, our last game of the Championship. Ed, I'll let you go, Ed, with this one because I know you hate the Blades. So go on, tear into them.
Look, I might hate the Blades, but I want to give praise to one player, and that's Sander Berger. They may have lost, but, you know, and I can say this with a painful mouth, but he's levels above. He's so good in that midfield. In the words of the old man from Red Devils, whatever, he wins that ball so much. he won't be playing at Sheffield United. He won't be at Bramall Lane by the end of the summer. I'm now guaranteed on that one because he's so good. But what I do have a little gripe, actually, a major gripe with Slavisa Jokanović. If I was a United fan, why on earth would you start a game with John Fleck and David McGoldrick as your wingers? I'm sorry, it's ludicrous. That's, you know, any manager that goes into that expecting to be successful, you know, they're stupid, is what it is. It's plain stupidity. I thought Ben Osborne has actually got a lot of unfair stick at left back. I didn't think he was too bad. And I'm going to swallow a bit of humble pie here because Birmingham really impressed me. And we'd sort of written them off a little bit at the start of the season. But the Duke was incredible up top, winning the battles he needed to win. I thought it was a really solid display by the likes of Gardner and Woods in midfield. Scott Hogan won't want to look at that chance he missed again. But we can't really talk about this game. And this will be my final point of this game. We can't talk about this game without talking about Teith Chong. I'll say my little spiel on him before I let you guys do. I didn't think he'd be a successful signing for Birmingham. I thought if this guy didn't play for Man United, he'd have been written off by now. But, you know, he shut me up well and truly. He was excellent. Really, really fantastic.
Yeah. I think my take from the game was, again, I probably have to eat some humble pie in the fact that I had a bit of a go at Lee Bowyer. And yeah, I think he actually set Birmingham up really well. He understood that he's not going to dominate the ball against Sheffield United with the players like Sanderberg and the team. So he just went for the smash and grab and it paid off.
I don't think that was a smash and grab, Will. I'm going to take an exception to that.
Would you not? I mean, no, because you look at the stats. And
it wasn't that. When you watch the game, and I know football is a stats game as well, but it's also a game for the eye. And when you watched it, United had so much possession but did so little with it. They really failed to challenge them at all, really.
Yeah, I understand what you mean by... I get what you mean, but all I mean is the fact that, like you say, Sheffield United have the majority of the ball, and I don't think Birmingham set out. They weren't trying to outplay them with the... You know, they weren't trying to have more possession.
Yeah.
They weren't trying to beat them in the midfield because they were never really going to do that. What they did is they pushed out to get their goal, and then once they did, they just looked solid defensively. And I think while Sheffield United were pretty uninspiring with the ball, that's partly due to Birmingham defended well. They didn't really give them much.
But crucially, they also created still. Like they could have, Scott Hogan missed that sitter, and you know they did have some real chances. But...
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. And ultimately, like I say, it's the game stats mean nothing at the end of the day. It's about the result, and Birmingham won 1-0, so huge credit to them.
I think they were deserving that. I mean, Tom, I've got one question for you. You look at that now back four of Sheffield United, we're going to have to get used to saying that. There's one glaring omission, and that's Chris Basham. Ludicrously not to play for me. What are your thoughts?
I wouldn't call it ludicrously because Basham's played in a back three for the best part of 6 years. Yeah. Whereas, you know, Egan and Robinson at Brentford and Forest respectively played in a back two more recently. But yeah, I think you don't leave out one of your key players. And Basham for me is one of, well, I think he was probably Sheffield United's only consistent performer throughout the entire season in the Premier League last season. He didn't let them down at all. I didn't like that omission. And I didn't like Ben Osborne at left back. I think he can do a job at left wing back, certainly. But he's not a left back for me. And I'd probably play Jaden Bogle there in United's next game against Swansea if I was Slavisa Jokanovic.
Yeah, I mean, my final point is that United's squad is so unevenly balanced. It's ridiculous. You know, that when you look at the subs they brought on, all three of them attackers, all three of them, you'd say incredibly established, high-profile names. Billy Sharp, there's no better strikers really in the division in the past 10 years. Ollie McBurney, he's scored lots of goals this level four, and Rian Brewster, if I speak, I'm in big trouble, in the words of Jose. I really, really don't rate the kid. I've seen a lot of him now, and he offers, you know, very little. And I've got a lot of Sheffield United fans who are friends, and they all say, oh, he runs about, he didn't get his service. He didn't get service. He does all the hard work. Well, I'm sorry. You can't be that unlucky for that long. And you look at their options going forward, and they're all very high profile, but the back four was incredibly uninspiring.
I think that's fair. And I think that rounds off our championship review quite nicely because, you know, obviously we haven't mentioned every game, but we've mentioned the key ones. And now we move into the third tier of English football where, you know, I think it was an exciting weekend to an exciting season for League One fans and certainly for Sheffield Wednesday fans where it began at the Valley with a 0-0 draw against Charlton Athletic. Ed, can you just give us sort of an insight into how you felt the Owls did?
Yeah, I mean, I'll start with the starting 11. The obvious sort of whoa was Jaden Brown at left wing. Against Huddersfield, he came on when Shanipa got injured and played there, but he's a left back by trade. And he's okay up there. This game, I'll sum it into sort of three sections. Great defensively, very, very solid in midfield, poor going forward. The loss of Callum Patterson, who thankfully is all okay, that had, you know, put a glaring impact on the game. And from that moment, it was stop, start, stop, start, stop, start. Andre Green, he isn't impressing me at all. And I think he's on borrowed time. And then Jaden Brown, we can't really judge because it's not his natural position, but he did okay. What I will say is the midfield of Bannon, Wing and Eden are in, with the possibility of bringing the likes of Massimo Luongo and George Byers into that, they are incredibly strong. They complement each other perfectly. Every single one of them did their role to a T. We saw what Bannon can do with that little run he had.
It was a great goal, wasn't it?
It was a good goal.
I knew that would be coming. but no, I thought defensively, like I said, partnership of Hutchins and Iorfa was really solid. You had little and large, basically. Pace versus brute force and mentality. A little word on Charlton. First of all, I want to say it's great to have the club back because there's a really good atmosphere. If it was a little weird seeing Thomas Sangar play his guitar on a pitch, you know, you wouldn't get Daypon Chansiri doing that. And I thought they were okay. And they pretty much were identical to what we were, which was good defensively, okay midfield, but poor going forward. Jaden Stockley, I agree with what you said on your pre-season predictions, Tom. He'll get 20 goals this season. Only if, though, they can provide him with those chances. He was a real nuisance up top. And a 0-0 draw was fairly fair, and I think both sides would have took it, and it's something to build on. There was a distinct style of play, which I'm really happy to see.
Yeah, and I think you've probably done that justice, to be fair. I mean, I thought Charlton, yeah, for all what they have on paper, they didn't show enough going forward for me. And of course, you can't have zero shots on target in 90 minutes and for me to praise the attack. So, yeah, I think 0-0 was the result that both teams deserved out of that game. The one thing that did surprise me with Charlton was I wasn't expecting Jaden Stockley to be their captain.
I thought that
was quite surprising. But, you know, it could just be the art of man management from Nigel Adkins, give you the armband, go score me loads of goals.
Yeah.
But we'll see on that one. Was there anything you want to add on this one, Will?
Nothing massively. Ed and yourself, Tom, have covered it well. All I would say is I'm sure Ed will agree. The sooner Josh Windass gets back in that squad, the better for Wednesday. Because the attack just weren't on the same page as the midfield, I thought. But
yeah, I mean, on that, I 100% agree. And you got to remember, we obviously had Florian Camberry come on, who looked lively. I did think Keith Andrews was a little bit too nice to him, to be honest. He didn't offer that much, but, you know, I'm not going to slate one of our own players. I thought he did his job nicely, and I'm excited to see more of him. You also got to remember our new number 9, Lee Gregory, coming in. Who scored bags of goals this level. So, you know, that front three will probably be the only time you see that front three in that sort of combination. So we can't judge it that much.
Yeah, absolutely.
Moving on to a game at the New York Stadium then. And it was a comfortable victory in the end for Paul Warne's Rotherham United. 2-0 victors against Plymouth Argyle. Now, Ed, do you think Rotherham flattered to deceive here?
I think that there's definitely a case of that, and I think they were, you know, the scoreline perhaps, especially early on, you know, reflected maybe not the true story. I think Plymouth certainly had their chances, but couldn't take them. I mean, this game will live long in the memory for one moment, and that's the Plymouth fans covering themselves in no glory with the Freddie Ladapo, you'll always be shit chant, and then he proceeds to score against them. It just showed what we sort of already knew, which is that Rotherham are a very organised side who will be a danger to any team this level. And perhaps Plymouth and Ryan Lowe aren't as developed as a team as we thought they were at times last season.
Yeah. Yeah, that's fair enough. And a huge shout out to the Plymouth fans. Excellent turnout.
Oh, that was, yeah.
Great game so far up north.
Yeah. That was quality.
It's always great to see Pie Face in Yorkshire. Moving on swiftly then to a game that is going to be huge, I'd say, in the course of the season in Sky Bet League One. And that is Sunderland 2, Wigan Athletic 1. Now, Ed, it was quite a tight game, shall we say, with a Ross Stewart goal being enough for Sunderland to secure all 3 points. How big is it for them to get off the mark, you know, with a good result?
I think it's crucial, and it builds confidence and breeds that confidence. And also because it's against Wigan, who, you know, there have been allegations that are sort of a Sunderland B team, at, you know, of years gone past. Did it affirm what we thought about Charlie Wyke? You know,
yeah.
The less I say, the better. But no, I think if from a Sunderland perspective, Elliot Embleton was pretty decent, you know, and showed what he was about. My only concern, really, is the fullback situation, which we know they're addressing with the likes of Dennis Sturkin from Tottenham, looks to be going there. But, you know, Daniel Neal and Kyle Winchester, they need to improve on that and get more bodies in. One thing I will say, though, is my prediction for the Young Player of the Year looks already like a great one, because Callum Doyle was sensational. 17 years old, he'll be captain of England one day. He was incredible. And Aidan McGeady. Some players just have a relationship with a club that works, and Sunderland is that club for Aidan McGeady, undoubtedly. So I think it's a great start for Sunderland, and they needed that. And to lose to Wigan would have been, you know, hurt even more because of the connotations around the game. But they can't get ahead of themselves. They've still got to strengthen with quality, which the likes of Lee Johnson keep stressing. But until it actually happens, it's just words in an interview.
Yeah, and Ed, I'd like to share a story courtesy of the Deluded World of RTG Twitter account. The RTG, of course, being the Sunderland Fans Forum. The title of the post is "Nice Story from Yesterday." One of the lads usually brings a slice of cheese in his pocket to put on his burger that he buys pre-match inside the stadium. He forgot it this time, so he had a cheeseburger with the cheese already in, and the staff offered to heat it up even more so the cheese was quite melted. Nice touch. Not something you usually hear.
I mean,
what a class touch.
It renames everything we know about the Stadium of Blackpool. Honestly, we've seen on Netflix and now we see on forums.
Honestly, Sunderland is. It's the strangest club in the world.
All I'm saying is, Ed, when you go to Sunderland away, make sure you ask for your cheese a little bit more than normal.
No, they don't do it normally, mate. It was just a class touch. That's why they heated it for him. So you can't expect it every time from the stadium.
I'm just trying to say, right, this is... What pocket does the cheese go in? Yeah. Is it in a wrapper? Is it just, like, bare cheese? Like...
Does he take them individually or just have like a pack of 10 that slowly gets wilted away game by game and he replenishes?
This is me cheese for Burton. This is me cheese for Oxford.
Cheese for Burton.
Is it special cheese? Like, what's wrong with the standing stadium of like issue cheese?
It's such a beautiful story. It brings a tear to the eye.
For me, that indicates that football's back. Whatever people might say, fans are back. Stories are back.
Certainly. I think that's all there is to mention about Sunderland game. It's a huge result for Sunderland. I don't think it's a disaster for Wigan. I know they'd have liked to have got one over on Sunderland, having signed Charlie Wyke and Max Power from them. But, you know, I think they'll come back and probably win their next fixture, actually. But moving on to the game which probably caused the most discourse in Sky Bet League One this weekend. That's Ipswich Town 2, Morecambe 2. Will, what a result for Morecambe.
Yeah, brilliant result for Morecambe with Cole Stockton getting both the goals. I think we, as a whole, I think Ed touched on it in the sort of season preview, and that was, in fairness to Ipswich, we might not see them gel straight away because of this, like, so many new introductions into the squad. And it's not the end of the world. It's a draw. It's a point. There's still a lot of time for this team to gel. And I still believe that they're going to be one of the strongest teams in the league just because of the quality they have all over the field. Connor Chaplin, I believe, played in sort of a number 10 role, which we didn't really see much at Oakwell, but the Ipswich fans seem pretty happy with him there. So it's not the end of the world. What were you saying, Ed?
I don't think he did play a number 10 role. I've got my thing, it says he plays a number 10 role, but I'm pretty sure Scott Fraser played the number 10.
It was just a fluid front three anyway, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Obviously, Piggott led the line, but I think Fraser and Chaplin intertwined. So I don't think that's a redundant point, Will, because, you know, Chaplin was what it seemed to me to be the instigator of play. Ed, you know, obviously Chaplin got the assist for Scott Fraser's goal. But you know, you said in the preview that Ipswich might take time to gel. How much longer do you think it will take for them to gel? Because this is quite a worrying result for some fans.
And I would say to them fans, give it time, trust the process. Trust Paul Cook and his five different voices. I think the issue for me is the back line, and they desperately need reinforcements there. Obviously, Turtu and Ciala going off injured wasn't great at all. Matt Penny... I've seen a lot of him and I'm yet to be convinced he's at a League One level, you know, to be fair. Obviously, you've got George Edmondson who'll come in when he's fit. But, you know, they've spent so much on their attack and their midfield. You know, they've just signed Kyle Edwards, who's another great addition. They really need to focus on that defence. And if they get that shored up, you know, it's game over. It's night to every other team in the league, to be honest, if they can get fit and firing. Cole Stockton, you know, two goals, you really can't complain. And he played for Vauxhall Motors, so I love the guy already.
Yeah, defo. And I think that quite nicely rounds off our review of this weekend's goings-on in the Championship and League One. Now, of course, I think League One might take the onus in the next episode because there's some corking fixtures in the division. But, I enjoyed that one, guys. But now it's time to look ahead and look forward to our predictions for match day 2 of the season. So, kicking off then with Peterborough Derby, I've got this down as a 2-1 victory for Derby. Now, that probably will raise a few eyebrows, but I think they weren't too bad against Huddersfield. And I think they've just got enough in their defence to beat Peterborough and shut them out. What do you think about this one, Ed?
I'm going to go for a 1-1. I think the Derby haven't managed to get some signs to the door, but I think Peterborough, they know what to expect now at this level. And I don't think either side has enough goals in them to really score more than one.
Good stuff. Will?
I'm going to go opposite to Tom. I'm going 2-1 Peterborough. I think Derby, they're not going to improve much from the Huddersfield match, whereas Peterborough, it can't get any worse than their start. And I think they're going to have a bit of a bounce back. And like Ed said, they know what it's about now. And I think they'll get up for it. And I'm going to say they're going to take a 2-1 victory.
Good. Next up is West Brom Luton. I've got quite a shock result down here, but I don't think it's too much of a shock in my head. I've got 2-1 Luton victory. I can just see Luton rocking up to the Hawthorns and nicking something from West Brom. And probably not nicking something, actually. Probably outplaying West Brom and getting in behind Ismail's back three with the pace of Adebayo and Onyedinma. And also they've got Carlos Mendes Gomez to come in, who of course excites me a lot. Who have you got winning this one, Will?
Neither. I've got a 1-1 draw. I think I agree with your points in that, Luton aren't going to be a pushover for West Brom. They've proven that they're going to be a real strong team this year. So yeah, 1-1 draw for me.
Ed?
I'm going to go 2-1 West Brom. I think this game will be won in midfield by West Brom, and therefore, they'll dominate. But I do think I completely agree with you when you say I think Luton can exploit West Brom's back line and they will find a way. But I think Ishmael will do one over Nathan Jones ever so slightly. And it was consistency that was the issue with Luton at times last campaign. So, I'm not the most faithful.
Yeah, certainly. And finally, in the Championship, Swansea, Sheffield United. It's a really tough one to predict, but I'm going to go for my third away win on the spin, and I'm going to say 2-0 Sheffield United. I just think Sheffield United's forward line being so dangerous and Swansea's defence being so porous, I can't see much past a Blades victory. What do you think, Will?
Sheffield United 2, Swansea 0. I've got the exact same as you, Tom, for the exact same reasons. That Swansea defence did not look good. And if that Sheffield United attack gets something going, they'll be unstoppable. So 2-0.
And Ed?
I'm going to go Swansea 1, Sheffield United 2. I think both sides were very, very similar in terms of had a lot of possession at the weekend, but did very, very little with it. So it'd be interesting to see how they come up against each other. But I just think, like you say, the front line of United will have enough quality to get the job done.
And dropping down into League One for the fourth of our Super Six predictions, Wigan, Rotherham. Now, this is, once again, a really tough one to predict, but I'm going to go Wigan 2, Rotherham 2. I just see Wigan's attack finally scoring a couple of goals, and Charlie White bagging. And I also see Rotherham doing the same with Freddie Ladapo probably getting on the score sheet yet again. Who have you got winning this one, Ed?
I'm going to go Wigan 1, Rotherham 0. I think I agree with you. If Wigan can get that attack firing, they'll do bits. And I think Rotherham was slightly flattered by the scoreline in terms of performance against Plymouth. But it'd be a real tight affair and it could go either way.
Yeah. Will?
I've gone for a 2-1 Rotherham. Just think Wigan, confidence is going to be pretty low after a disappointing result against Sunderland. And I don't know, I just see Rotherham rocking up at the DW or whatever it's called these days and taking all 3 points. So I'm going 2-1 Rotherham.
Yeah. Next up, Oxford United versus Charlton Athletic. I back Charlton to finally get into the scoring groove here. I'm going to say Charlton 3, Oxford 1. Jaden Stockley to finally get off the mark this season and add to his tally. Ed, who have you got winning at the Kassam?
Yeah, I agree. I'm going to go for a 1-0 Charlton win. Like I said, they didn't look impressive at all going forward, but I think they will have enough, and defensively they're incredibly resolute.
Yeah, and Will?
I'm in agreement with Ed for a 1-0 Charlton win. I see Charlton dominating the game, but from Oxford's performance, it sounded like their defence was their strong point, so I can't see them leaking too many goals. So I'm saying 1-0 Charlton.
And the final game of our Super Six predictions is MK Dons versus Sunderland. I've got Sunderland taking the 3 points at Stadium MK here. I'm going to go 2-0 Sunderland and Streaky Johnson to live up to his name. And I think Sunderland might go on a bit of a mega run here at the start of the season. What do you think about this one, Will?
I think I've gone a bit opposite. I've gone for a 1-0 MK Dons win. I don't know. I just see I'm almost the opposite of you. I think Sunderland might almost be a bit go into this one a bit too lethargic after the Wigan victory. And MK Dons, fresh after scoring 3 goals. I don't know. I just see them grabbing this one in a bit of an upset, getting all 3 points against Sunderland.
And I agree with that. I think it'll be a 1-0 MK Dons win. I think Sunderland, Streaky Johnson, as you like to call him, Tom, I think Milton Keynes Dons then for some reason. MK Dons, sorry. I think they showed at Bolton what they can do. And if they can shore up that defence a little bit, I think they could cause a little bit of an upset.
Well, we'll wait and see. And of course, in next week's review show, we'll finally be able to see how the predictions table it is lining up. And hopefully, I'm top of it. But we'll see. Thank you, as ever, if you've got to this point of the podcast. We really do appreciate all the support on our recent episodes. And it's been quite overwhelming to see all the comments flooding in. And of course, the Ed Marsh fan club starting in Birmingham. If you have enjoyed the podcast, please do give it a review if you listen on Apple or Spotify. Give it a like if you listen on YouTube and do comment. What do you think about what we've said in this episode? Do you agree? Do you disagree? You can find us on Twitter at Floodlight Pod. And as ever, enjoy this riff of There's No Other Way from Blur. Thank you for listening.